Amelia Schaefer, thank you very much for joining me today. Talk about what the Alzheimer's Association does.
Thanks for asking. The Alzheimer's Association is a nonprofit support organization, and we have 8 offices across the state of Colorado, and I would say our primary service is supporting individuals with Alzheimer's and their family members through support groups, education classes. We have a 24-hour helpline. We provide counseling services for individuals. We do much work from the time that someone recognizes they might have Alzheimer's all the way through the very end of the disease. And that's the primary service that we provide. And then on a more global level, we do a lot of work in public policy to look at how the regulations are set up and how legislation is set up to support and protect individuals with Alzheimer's and their family. And then ultimately, we actually are a funder of research and a supporter of research because we really have a vision of a world without Alzheimer's someday, and we hope to achieve that someday through the efforts in research.
Can you explain what the difference is between dementia and Alzheimer's?
The way I like to describe it is that dementia is actually not a specific disease. It's really a description of a set of symptoms that include things like memory loss and thinking skills and problem-solving abilities. So many people have dementia, but they aren't exactly sure why. There's always a cause for dementia. It's not normal to be living with dementia. And Alzheimer's disease happens to be the number one most common form of dementia. There are, over 70 different causes of dementia. Some of those reversible, and some, like Alzheimer's, are irreversible. So many people ask about Alzheimer's and dementia, and I like to tell people that dementia is not normal. There's always a cause for dementia, and Alzheimer's, unfortunately, is the number one cause of dementia.
And what is Alzheimer's exactly? I mean, it's a number one cause of dementia, but what is that disease exactly?
Yeah, and I think that's a great question. Alzheimer's disease is a neurodegenerative disease, so it's a form of plaques and tangles that are actually attacking the brain cells. And unfortunately, what we see over time is that those brain cells are no longer able to regenerate, and it ends up leading to what we consider brain cell death, which means that all of the functions of an individual's life that are associated with those various parts of the brain eventually disappear as well. And Alzheimer's is very unique in that it doesn't happen overnight. It's not like someone having a stroke where overnight they've lost their ability to communicate or they've lost certain use of their body. It's a very slow, insidious disease, which means that the changes occur over many years' time. In fact, 8 to 10 years on average.
How does one contract Alzheimer's?
That's the million-dollar question for us today, because we still don't know what it is exactly that causes Alzheimer's. And that's, I think, one of the great mysteries that we're researching right now. We do believe, though, that there is actually not just one cause of Alzheimer's, that it is more likely that there are multiple causes of Alzheimer's and multiple things throughout an individual's life that can put them at a higher risk. So, for instance, we know that people who've had a prior head injury are at an increased risk of developing Alzheimer's. We also know that people who have potentially a heart-healthy lifestyle and a heart-healthy diet and exercise tend to lower their risks of getting Alzheimer's. And then we also know, of course, there can be a genetic component to Alzheimer's. And that is a big question people ask, and there's much research right now happening to understand really what is the genetic linkage to Alzheimer's disease.
Is there a genetic link having to do with dementia that is not Alzheimer's?
Because there are many different types of dementia, there can be some genetic links. For instance, a disease like Huntington's disease is considered a dementia, and we know that it has a very strong genetic link. Whereas something like vascular dementia, which is typically caused by heart disease and stroke, we also know there can be a family history of heart disease, and yet there are still some things that many people can do to mitigate some of those risk factors as well with heart disease. So, you know, depending on the type of dementia, there can be a genetic component. But again, I think, you know, the brain is a mystery because it's very difficult to research. So I feel like we're in the very infancy in many ways of what we know about Alzheimer's and many of the other dementias.
Well, speaking of research, can you talk briefly about some current research trends?
Really, we're looking for more research dollars so we can expand upon the research. But what we're looking at right now are some of the basic components of things you've talked about today. What are the risk factors? What is it that leads to an increased incidence of Alzheimer's? Even really researching technologies to understand how to diagnose Alzheimer's, because there is no single test today to diagnose Alzheimer's. So it's very difficult to get at if we can't even really see what's happening in the brain and understand who might be developing Alzheimer's before they're developing the symptoms. So we're at a basic science level in many ways with Alzheimer's research and trying to understand the domino effect and which changes in the brain occur first. And hopefully that will lead us to understand which are the consequences of the disease as opposed to the causes. We're really trying to get at the very beginning of understanding not only what leads to a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, but then eventually what are some of the meaningful treatments and ways that we can hopefully not only prevent Alzheimer's in the future, but maybe delay the onset of Alzheimer's until someone is well into their hundreds.
There are so many questions about Alzheimer's, yet it's the greatest healthcare challenge facing the world. Why is that?
You know, one of the things we've known is that across the world, there hasn't been a coordinated effort to understand and learn from one another. And the Alzheimer's Association, in the past 20 years or so, has been convening the international community to not only share research, but share an understanding of what the disease means in their society. So I do think that we've seen advancements in the last, you know, 5 and 10 years especially, that are really helping us understand the global impact of the disease. I think a big piece of that is having a commitment not only in public policy and legislation, but also a commitment in funding. And, Alzheimer's is still a very underfunded disease. If you look at the priorities through the National Institutes on Health, it still has not yet reached $1 billion in funding from the government, and yet it is the most costly disease to our society financially, as well as the public toll that it takes on an individual and their family. So we know that there is much more to know and much more to learn, and we're optimistic about that. But it will take a true commitment and an understanding that in the long run, it is time for us to act. You're exactly right. This is a public health crisis that is upon us today. This is not something we're talking about in the future. So we really do know that this is something that we need people to pay attention to today and to prioritize and really look at research as our next big commitment in making sure that future generations aren't living with this disease.
Is it on the rise?
Yeah, it's absolutely on the rise, and primarily it's on the rise because we are an aging population right now. We know about the baby boomers, we know about the silver tsunami, and we know here in Colorado in the next decade, we're going to see a nearly 40% increase in the numbers of people with Alzheimer's, and that is specifically tied to the fact that we are a quickly aging state. So we know that age is the number one risk factor for Alzheimer's, and so because of this silver tsunami, diseases like Alzheimer's are absolutely on the rise.
I'd like to take a little time to talk about Alzheimer's caregiving and the caregivers. How is Alzheimer's caregiving different than, say, caregiving for someone whose illness has nothing to do with the brain?
I'm glad you're focusing on caregivers because it really is through the efforts of caregivers that we see the quality of life and quality of care for the individual with Alzheimer's either get better or get worse. And we know that caregivers of individuals with Alzheimer's have the number one caregiver burnout rate. We know they have the number one caregiver stress rate, which unfortunately means they also have the number one caregiver mortality rate, meaning that the stress and strain is so great that the caregiver ends up dying before the individual with the disease. Now, all of those facts are quite startling, and I think if you look at the length of this disease, again, could be 8 to 10 years, but I've worked with families who've cared for someone up to 20 years. That is a very long time to have another individual who you are caring for completely, whether it be in your home or in their home, or eventually for many people, it's looking for residential care outside the home. And then you are talking about a financial toll and financial strain on families that many people don't talk about. It's a very taboo subject to talk about. But we know that senior care is extremely expensive, and Medicare does not pay for it. And in many cases, people aren't qualifying for Medicaid. So what that means is it's coming out of my pocket, your pocket. It's coming out of whoever is in this individual's life. So we see families pulling together to pay $6,000 to $10,000 on average per month to pay for residential care. And that financial strain is also, I think, a great strain on caregivers as well. So I think what sets it apart is the length of the disease, the financial strain, because Alzheimer's is the number one most expensive disease out there right now. And also, I think it's that idea that this person is changing. They are no longer the person that someone knows and loves. And sometimes the changes are very hard to accept, especially when it relates to a person's relationship. When your mother forgets who you are, when your father forgets who you are, it's very painful to go through a process like that and to continue being 100% committed as a caregiver.
A little self-disclosure, I have not yet seen the film that will air tonight on Colorado Public Television, but I have watched a brief, I guess it's a trailer for it, and read some about it. And what struck me was that somebody who was a caregiver talked about going through a photo book, you know, scrapbook, and realizing that they were really the only one that was going through that book and having those memories, because the person with Alzheimer's was slowly but surely forgetting the memories that were associated with those photographs. And to me, that was really striking.
Yeah, it's a very heartbreaking part of this disease, that those shared memories that a family or friends share together, they are really becoming much more one-sided, because the individual with the disease is regressing back in time. They're forgetting things that happened recently. They're really going back to a time from when they were younger, and they may eventually forget their family. They may forget that they ever moved out of their home in which they were born. They may really focus on looking for their own mom or dad and siblings, and that becomes their world, as opposed to the world that we've all built around an individual. So it really can be heartbreaking. And I think one of the big things I tell families is to know that you are not going through this alone, to know that you are not the only one facing this, and to understand how others have coped and some of their strategies is really one of the best things you can do for yourself, because it can be a very isolating and lonely disease for caregivers. So that's why we find it so important for them to reach out, whether it be through an online chat room or a support group in their neighborhood or an online education class or calling someone on our 24-hour helpline, to really understand that they are not alone in going through this and that they don't have to have all the answers, that there are people here who want to help them and people here who are here to help them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That is very important for people, because, again, it can be extremely isolating.
What kind of coping skills have these caregivers added to their toolbox, so to speak, as they've spent time helping a loved one who has Alzheimer's?
Yeah, I think that there are three very important tools that every caregiver needs in their toolbox. The first is to understand the nature of the disease and what will happen in the future, to really understand the stages and phases of this disease are important, so that you can plan for a time when things won't be like they are today. So that's the first. The second, I would say, is to really equip yourself with excellent communication skills. We know that communication changes for the individual with the disease, and we know that there are very concrete things that caregivers can do differently to alleviate frustration, hopefully to not trigger agitation in the individual, and actually to make themselves feel better about how they are able to continue communicating with the individual throughout, from the beginning all the way throughout to the end of the disease process. And the third tool I would say that's very important is to start to understand how anxiety can build in the individual with the disease and what they can do as caregivers to prevent some of those anxiety triggers, and also some techniques that they can use to alleviate some of that anxiety and agitation that might build based upon false thoughts or hallucinations the person might be having. There are some very simple techniques people can use to help alleviate that anxiety and get the person back to a place of feeling safe and calm. So those are the top three things I recommend that caregivers equip themselves with, and they can do that, again, through a class, through hearing how others do it in a support group, going online to learn some of that information, or calling our helpline. Those are all very easy, accessible ways to get those top three tools today.
Well, one last question for you. Amelia Schaefer, Vice President of Programs at the Alzheimer's Association of Colorado. Tonight on Colorado Public Television, a film called The Sum Total of Our Memory will screen. And could you briefly talk about this program tonight and what role you will play?
Yes, it's such a touching and wonderful program that will air tonight. The first hour will be this film, The Sum Total of Our Memory, following three couples and how they each are taking a unique way of coping with this disease. They talk about things like, who am I now that I have Alzheimer's, and what's my purpose in life? To many of the caregivers talking about the relationship changes and how they've learned to cope with some of those while trying to plan for the future. And then the second hour will be a panel discussion with a local neuropsychologist from the University of Colorado, Denver, and myself. I'll be there to talk about resources for caregivers. And then we'll have a Colorado couple who is currently living with Alzheimer's themselves, Gary and Nancy, and they will share their story of learning the news that they, Gary has been diagnosed, and how they both have made it through that kind of devastating news, and the advice that they've learned that they want to share with other couples to help not only give them hope, but give them concrete ideas on how they have learned to live day to day.
There is a sort of audience participation component in that people all over the state are encouraged to call in with questions. Can you talk about that?
Yes. Actually, we're not doing a live call-in show that evening, but really right up until 5 o'clock or so tonight, we are accepting questions at the studio, I'd say, is the best place to send those questions. Things that people want to learn, either from a couple living with the disease or a couple of the experts on the panel who know about resources and know what we have to offer here in Colorado. So we would love to hear any questions that caregivers might have. I would say the best place for people to do that would be cpt12.org. And there's a great place right there. You can submit your questions, and we will try to get to those that evening during our panel discussion.
Well, Amelia Schaefer, thanks very much for speaking with me today, and thanks for your work.
Thank you.